Welcome to my Travel Time podcast. Today I'm talking with Deborah Young. Deborah is the CEO of RegTech, and I met Deborah at least half a dozen years ago, perhaps more, as a participant on one of my leadership programs. She was a bit of a star on that program, one of our very conscientious participants. Subsequent to that, Deborah was working with an organisation at the time, was called AVCAL, the Australian Venture Capital and Private Equity Association. It's now called the Australian Investment Council, I think, or Association.
That's right.
And Deborah was a general manager there, and she brought me in and I ran some masterclasses on negotiation there. But more recently, Deborah has become the CEO of RegTech. So welcome, Deborah.
Thank you very much, Richard. And it's very nice to talk to you again after probably a few years since we last talked.
It is. And during that time, you've been in this role of RegTech CEO. You've also been nominated for a whole series of awards. I noticed the last one I saw was, I think you were named by the Australian Financial Review as one of the top 100 influential women in business in Australia, if I'm correct. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, look, we'll take complete credit, of course, at our end for you achieving that. So, congratulations on all of that success. I wonder if you could tell us about RegTech. What is RegTech?
Yeah, sure. So RegTech was a term coined probably 5 or 6 years ago now out of the UK, and it really refers to any technology that is helping to facilitate or addressing challenges around regulation and compliance. And what's really interesting about RegTech is that it actually represents a really, really broad range of different solutions. So to put it in like some easy contexts, it can be things like anti-money laundering software, which might help banks, with their financial crime prevention. It might be software that helps translate things from a PDF format to a digital format. It might be tools that help organisations measure their conduct and culture. Mm-hmm. It might be software that helps large-scale compliance training, so where organisations are required to have their advisors meet certain standards and keep up with professional development, things like that. There's solutions in there for that. There's also product and marketing compliance solutions. So it's and digital identity is another one. And that's very topical at the moment, because I think if we think about a couple of weeks ago when during this crisis where we saw lots of people lined up around Centrelink offices, that's all linked back to the inability of the government to actually identify people without them physically presenting themselves.
Yes.
So that's kind of RegTech in a nutshell. And RegTech is used by regulated entities, and that's across any vertical. So not just banks and financial services, but any vertical that's regulated. That could be telco, healthcare, real estate, education. So anything that you could think of that would have regulation and compliance uses it. It's used by regulators then. And
if I'm correct, you're a membership organisation.
We are.
You have both ends, is that right? So you have the large users of the technology, but
yes,
you also have a lot of the innovators who are developing the technology as members, is that correct?
Yeah, correct. So we established 3 years ago, and it was really driven from the vendor's perspective. A lot of small software companies were finding it incredibly challenging to actually have the right conversations with the right people within large and complex regulated entities. And so the association was established by a few startups and scale-ups in order to give themselves a very clear single voice, a non-profit association, to give them that single voice and then bring the whole of the ecosystem together to run programs that actually help everybody collaborate, see where the challenges are, and then try and reduce some of the friction that was being experienced. So, I mean, that's really why, how it came about. And we started with about 8 firms and we're now 150 companies. And as you've just said, about 100 of those are reg tech companies who have different solutions. And the other 50 are either the regulated entities or the intermediaries like the consulting firms and law firms and people like that.
So what's the take up been like from the major firms in terms of the use of the technology?
So it was a little bit slow to begin with, but if you think about that, we've only been, we were established only 3 years ago. And to think at this stage, we've got 2 out of the big 4 banks as part of the membership. We have Microsoft and other global firms like EY, Deloitte, KPMG, Accenture, Bearing Point. So we've got a lot of big global firms now as part of what we're doing. So I think it's on a, and COVID has thrown a little bit of curveball at us from 2 perspectives, but I actually think it's on a growth trajectory because this brings efficiency and productivity to organisations. And sometimes you simply can't throw more people at the problem. You have to get the people around the higher order issues and then let the machine learning and the artificial intelligence do some of that lower order grunt work that was previously done by people.
Yeah, right. And so what are, you mentioned the identity issue with Centrelink recently, but what are some of the kind of major issues that you're tackling in the regulatory environment?
Well, it's some of the things like financial crime, money laundering, human trafficking, child protection.
Right.
So all of these are real live issues that RegTech has been doing actually for a long period of time now, but it's just not that well known. But then there are other things like digital identity. There's also things like when you look across an organization, there's a lot of information and a lot of data, but a lot of it is sitting all over the place in various C drives and on networks and on email systems and all the rest. So there's also solutions that can help organizations actually make sense of all of the information that they have so that they can actually scan across all of your internal systems and actually apply then a compliance overlay to that to ensure that you are complying with various regulations and laws and rules that might exist. So it is really broad, but this really does go to the heart of what we all expect as consumers, and that's trust. So RegTech actually helps build trust because if you can comply to the laws and the regulations that have been put in place, that means that people can start to trust the environments that they're working within. And so all of those things like the financial crime, the anti-money laundering, if we can prevent the bad people from getting in, that means that we're working within a much more trustworthy environment.
Yeah. And so the pandemic, how's that affected the field that you're working in?
So it's really a bit of a two-headed beast, really, because on one hand, we've got a lot of early stage companies in our cohort. They are going to struggle because they're not large, more mature firms. We've worked hard lobbying the government over the last 4 or 5 weeks to make sure that things like the JobKeeper package were going to find scale-ups and startups were actually eligible for that because it's harder to prove if you're an earlier stage company about that 30% drop in revenue.
Yes.
And so we've pushed for more flexibility in some of the interpretations of those so that a larger portion of our members will actually be eligible for the support and some of that stimulus.
Yes.
So we already had some challenges around capital. And one of the things that's unique about RegTech is that it tends to have a longer sales cycle. This isn't an app that you can just download on your phone and it works from tomorrow. Compliance and regulation is linked to laws, and it's complex, and they're deeply seated within organisations. And so it's not that easy just to walk in and say, well, I'm going to put in a RegTech solution that's going to solve all my problems. Yeah. It actually does take a long time to, A, trial it, make sure it's going to work, you know, running pilots, then getting approval to then deploy across, you know, banks as an example, which is quite a complex thing. So it does tend to have a longer sales cycle. And what that means is that for traditional venture capital, the sales cycle might be a bit long for them. So RegTech has had to kind of seek alternative sources of capital. And so we're doing some work around helping that capital flow in. But COVID has definitely thrown a little bit of a curveball for earlier stage companies, of which we're trying to help them through some of that. But on the flip side, what COVID has actually done is brought the global community together in a much more connected way. And to give you an example, we pivoted immediately, running all of our events online straight away. And within 5 weeks, we've had 15 countries participate in our programs, 700 people attend our programs from more than 250 companies. Now, as a normal rule, we wouldn't be experiencing anything like that.
Yes.
And this global, more authentic conversation is happening. I'm talking to people in their living rooms now.
Yes.
So it's a more authentic conversation. And the global borders are actually dissolving to a large degree. So I think that there's more global opportunity for RegTechs who are members of our association to get connected in with that global opportunity more easily. So it's kind of a bit of a two-pronged beast.
And just the last one about RegTech. Are there sort of front runners or star companies in Australia in terms of developing technology in this field?
Well, I think what I'm, because I represent a very broad cohort and I don't like to pick winners.
Name the winners.
But what I can tell you, and it might be quite surprising to people, is that a few years ago we did some research with the Boston Consulting Group and they did a global RegTech survey, and Australia were equal third in the world in terms of product development of RegTech. So equal third with Switzerland, behind the UK and the US, as you would expect. And certainly in the UK, where RegTech is a much more mature market. So we're punching way above our weight when you consider our population, but this has been driven out of a very robust and well-regarded regulatory regime that we have in Australia around financial services. And so the high amount of product development and very sophisticated product development has been driven by people who have worked in compliance and in risk and who've left their careers to actually address some of these challenges. So as we like to say, you won't see many of our cohort wearing T-shirts. We don't look good in T-shirts anymore.
Right.
This is actually a very mature and experienced cohort of people who have all worked as risk managers. So I think the depth and maturity is there. We just need some more wind beneath our wings, which is, you know, one of the roles that the association plays.
Yeah, fantastic. So coming back to you personally, Deborah, could you tell us a little bit about your own personal history? And perhaps also a little bit about your own career.
Yeah. So I started my career really in financial services a long time ago. And I did not go to university. In fact, I left school in year 10.
Yep.
But through good luck, fortune, and a number of other things, I found myself working in investment banking, and also found myself in investment banking at a time when the Australian dollar was floated for the first time back in the 80s. Mm. And so I was in the right place at the right time to develop some skills in foreign exchange, which were highly sought after. And so that period from my early 20s to probably my early 30s was spent working in investment banking, and I rose through the ranks to be managing national operations manager for a number of investment banks. And then I had two children, and believe it or not, I was actually made redundant whilst I was on maternity leave with my second child, which of course is illegal, illegal now. But you know, those were the times, and I decided I had been working with an industry association a little bit back in those days, and that started my love affair with industry bodies, and I had volunteered and done some stuff. And then actually when I decided to leave the bank, or the bank decided to leave me, but I made the decision to not push the issue, I actually went and worked for an industry association. And really since then, with one exception where I worked for a corporate, in corporate communications for 3 years, I've really been working as an advocate across financial services for industry bodies over that time. But happily, I did end up going to university when I was 53 years old. I met you before that, actually, I think. And so that was not really going to university, but I did do one of your programs at Mount Eliza. But it was,
probably already obvious that you had a love for learning.
Yeah. So I just hadn't, you know, my career had taken off. I had two children, the time, and they were in school, you know, all the rest. And a couple of years ago, I just said, okay, I need to go and do this now. So I enrolled in an executive MBA program at the University of Technology here in Sydney. Yes. And that was actually, that program gave me the courage to jump out of the my good job that I had at AVCAL, as you pointed out before, and I decided to take a sabbatical into technology for I gave myself 2 years, and it was a bit of a scary leap. But basically, during that two-year period, I worked at Microsoft, I worked in social media, I worked for Telstra's accelerator called NeuroD. I worked for the Australian Information Industry Association. I worked for Data 61 for a period of time as well. So I got kind of, I was just collecting up all of this knowledge about technology and its intersection with business and what I'd been involved in. And that led me to the door of RegTech when they first established the association. And so I threw myself at them and said, I think I can help you. And this would be the perfect way for me to round out my career in risk and financial services, now back to advocacy, which is what I'm good at. And so that's what led me kind of full circle.
And you know, observing you from afar, I think that there's some of your strengths. You've been a real self-starter. You're definitely into self-learning. You've shown a lot of courage also to jump into new situations there. So now that you're with all that experience, and now your latest experience in leadership, what are your views about what works in leadership?
You know, authenticity, it's a word that's used a lot. But being authentic helps develop, and going back to that trust word, helps develop trust. And so I've tried to lead with authenticity and encourage those around me to do that as well. And I think it's also important to, as a leader, to take people on a journey. Nobody likes surprises. And I'd say that that's for your teams. There should be no surprises in your organization if you've taken everybody on a journey. And same goes when you're dealing with boards, as I've had to do. Is no surprises in the boardroom either.
Yes.
Make sure that you're taking your board members on a journey as well, and that you've always caught up with board members before the board meeting, because the board meeting really should, you should sail through that with no surprises. but often I do hear stories of people getting blindsided at board meetings and things.
Yes.
So I think being authentic and taking people on a journey, and don't be afraid to be a bit of a storyteller.
Yeah.
You know, telling a story can help people really understand all the facets of what might be going on, and using examples where you can to demonstrate, you know, what something is all about. And I think,
what about during the pandemic, do you think it's changed the role?
Look, I think it's actually the same, but I think it's heightened. The additional thing I would say is it's really super important to look after your own mental health during this time, because what I'm finding is that in helping and trying to support as many of the members that I am at the moment, I'm getting a lot of energy from being able to be that support mechanism for people. But I think leading, you can't just look at all the textbook stuff. You actually also have to look after your mental health and making sure that you're making time for yourself. In fact, down the back of my house, I've written on my back windows with a whiteboard marker, fresh air, blue sky, sunshine. You've got to remember that those things actually are still there. Well, of course, not in Melbourne, because that's where you are.
Thank you very much. Are you actually working from home, or are you still going into the office?
Yes, but actually remembering those things are still there, and remembering to take some time out for yourself is super, super important at the moment.
Right. Well,
yoga, mindfulness, meditation, really super important.
I apologise to my listeners for that insult to Melbourne, but
sorry about that.
It's been absolutely lovely talking to you. Congratulations on the progress that you're making, and all the best for the future, Deborah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Richard. Great to talk to you again.